The PGA Tour presents the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment. Golf Talk America, streaming live on PGATour.com. Follow us today and every day on Twitter at Golf Talk America. Now, the Golf Talk America crew.
Well, hello again, everybody. Welcome to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews back in the studios. This feels so nice to be home again because for a while, it seems like both Frank and I have been on the road because that's exactly where we have been. But it's a big week this week, the PGA Championship in Springfield, New Jersey at a legendary Baltusrol Golf Course. And they claim every year best field in golf, and I guess that's true. You're going to find not only the top players, but you're going to find a lot of PGA club players that are going to be in the field here. Sometimes they surprise you a little bit, at least in the early rounds, so we'll see what happens. But the PGA Championship underway in a couple of days, starting on Thursday. Coming up on the show, we've got Earl Forsey joining us with PGA Tour Radio to talk a little bit about looking ahead to Baltusrol, but also what happened last weekend at the Canadian Open and Johnny Vegas, big come-from-behind victory. And, of course, Bob Bupka will join us from Baltusrol right there on site. He, of course, is the host of The Grill Room on TuneIn Radio. And as Bob did at the Open Championship and will now do at the PGA Championship, he's always at the biggest. If we can't get there, we've always got Bob Bupka that we can rely on that will be there to set the scene for us, and he'll be joining us in just a little bit. Hey, always Frank Bassett with us in the Nashville studios. Frank was in L.A. last week. I was in Colorado. It's kind of summertime. Everybody's got to take a few days off, and Frank, as I understand it, your golf clubs did not make it back from Los Angeles, and you're more than happy with that. Wherever they are, you're not going to seek them out. You're not going to try to find them. You're happy they lost, and it's a sign from God, isn't it, that maybe you should stop playing?
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I did not play well. I will tell you, I was trumped, so to speak, by Lauren Gold, who was the keyboardist and background vocals in The Who. Lauren and I played together, and Roger Sarchet and some others, and I didn't play well. I didn't chip or putt at all. I could drive it. I could hit decent shots into the green, but it didn't matter if I was 2 feet away. I could not sink a putt. And it had nothing to do with my Seymour putter. It had everything to do with my C-less brain. So it was terrible, but had a great time. LA's fabulous. Good. Laura Bryna did the show with us last week, and you know Laura, and she'll be doing That's America to Me, a segment every week on Golf Talk America beginning in August, which is going to be a lot of fun. We stayed at her home. Oh my God, Tim. Well, when your next door neighbor was James Gandolfini, I guess you live in a pretty decent neighborhood. What do you think?
Yeah.
Oh, you should see this place. It's pure Hollywood. I mean, just pure Hollywood. But I had a great time. I'll tell you the highlight. The highlight of the week, Roger surprised me, took me to the Reagan Presidential Library. And we spent 4 hours in there. And that wasn't enough time. Air Force One is in that library. You tour Air Force One. Marine One is in that library. Up on the top of a mountain in the Simi Valley. Marine One, Air Force One, the presidential limousine, the presidential security Suburbans, and the suit that he, when he was shot, that they cut off of him, and he was kidding with the nurses and doctors. He said,
"Medical people,
this is a new suit." Yeah, the medical people, this is a new suit. And just as they were putting him under, they showed interviews from the doctors, and as Reagan was being put under to be going to surgery, basically to save his life, people don't realize he was almost dead. He just looked at the doctor and said, "Doctor, I hope you're a Republican." Yeah. And he said, "Mr. President, today we're all Republicans." So it was fabulous. I can't say enough about that library. If you're in Simi Valley or in the L.A. area, you got to go. And you got to go to Herb Alpert's club, Vibrato. Vibrato, Herb Alpert's club in Beverly Hills. Oh, God, that was fabulous. Yeah, his daughter, Elin, I'm messing up her name. Oh, my Lord.
It's okay.
Anyway,
okay.
Herb Alpert's daughter.
His daughter.
Runs it, and it's really her club, I guess. But she was fabulous, a great host.
Very cool.
For us there. Yeah, so it was a great time in L.A. Well, how was Chris Botti? I think you went to a concert at Red Rocks Amphitheater.
Yeah, I went to Red Rocks on Sunday night to see Chris Botti concert, and he's a jazz trumpet player, for people that don't know. But it was packed. I don't know how many people are in that place, but it's an incredible venue. I've never been there before to see a concert. Have you ever seen a concert there before?
I have Kenny Loggins.
Red Rocks. Okay. Oh, that'd be great.
It was awesome.
It's just like it sounds. It's big old, you know, Red Rocks that are probably 10 million years old that they formed into an amphitheater outside of Denver, about 30 minutes outside. And he was great and had a great singer with him. And we got to go backstage afterwards and meet him and take some pictures. And anyway, a friend of mine is a very good friend of his. So I kind of used that to get in. We had three girls with us, teenagers, and they had a great time. So, yeah, it was very cool. And it's a great venue to listen to music. I guess it seats about 10,000. And it's an old place. I didn't realize it was built back in the 40s. And it just goes, as you can imagine, from kind of like the Hollywood Bowl. Right by the stage and then all the way back up, and it's about 80 rows. I know because I went to the back to take a picture and I was out of breath. So it was a cool time, and we got back in late last night, but finally made it and had a great time. So both of us enjoyed our time and played a little golf in California, also in Colorado. But we want to talk about the real golfers, the guys that really know what's going on, both last week at the Canadian Open, of course, coming up at the PGA Championship. And here, as he likes to do almost every week, and we're very fortunate to have him, is Earl Forsey, voice of PGA Tour Radio, to talk about both those, last week and the weekend coming up. Earl, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, doing well, and good. Yeah, it's got late in the season pretty quickly, hasn't it?
It sure has. I mean, what happened? I guess the Olympics, the Ryder Cup. We squeezed everything we could in the world of golf into one summer, and here we are with almost on top of each other, things happening because the Olympics will be right around the corner, which hopefully will get people's attention. And before we get to the PGA Championship, let's give Johnny Vegas a little credit, Earl. What happened at Glen Abbey up in Ontario over the weekend at the PGA, at the Canadian Open? Pretty great come from behind, considering the week before, Johnny was pretty disappointed in how things happened for him the weekend before, but he really turned it on over the weekend and certainly on Sunday, didn't he?
Right, yeah, he did, and it was a really interesting week. I mean, that golf course, we know it well. It's, you know, 28 times it's hosted that tournament, but man, it was playing so firm and fast last week. I mean, it was crazy, and we gave a stat during the day. I don't know exactly where it ended up at the end of Sunday, but I mean, all the drives, 500-plus drives of 350 or more. I mean, it was just crazy. Dustin Johnson started Saturday, I guess it was. Hit iron off the tee, 354. I mean, it was just crazy. And then Sunday, you know, it was overcast, and there was probably some water put on the course, so it was a little different. The winds were down, and they were coming from a different direction, so it kind of changed. And then we get on the air, and we're wrapping up Jeff Ogilvie, 63. So there were three 63s early in the day, and you kind of knew then that, you know, at least it was there for somebody to come back. And Vegas has got, he's always had that big game. I mean, when we came on and he won out the desert in 2011, he's an impressive young player, and he's matured that now, and he's battled through, like a lot of these guys do, injuries. I mean, it was a couple of really tough seasons for him, and the last couple of years, and then had to earn his way back on tour for this year, and coming off, like you said, the disappointment the week before, but Phil Tatarangi, the analyst alongside this past week, kept pointing out those low, low rounds he put up early the week before. And, you know, sometimes maybe that's a momentum, that's kind of the kickstart to, in his case, in Vegas's case, getting it done late this past weekend and playing as well as anybody late down the stretch. Birdied those three holes coming in, 16, 17, and 18, and no one could quite do it, and it was interesting then late in the day, and all the pressure, so many different guys were, you know, in a share at the top of the leaderboard on Sunday, and one by one, we see it from time to time, and all the time, I should say, in golf, certainly, and then, you know, the example last week was poor Steve Wheatcroft, who just was crushed, you know, had the tournament lead, and he's going into the final stretch, and he had played beautifully over that entire back nine the whole week, and, you know, needed one birdie basically coming in, tied for the lead with three to play, two par fives. We'd seen eagles at both of them all week. He needs to play him in one under, and he has, you know, just a horrendous finish and makes a bogey, falls one back, and has that tough shot and, you know, came over the green, hit that bunker shot into the water to end his hopes, and you could end the emotion. You know, it happens. It's the old ABC, the old wide world of sports, the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat, and we saw it. I mean, it was right there at 18 this week.
And are we also seeing a lot of depth in golf in general? You take Tiger out of the picture because of the injuries in the last couple of years, and people thought, well, what's the tour going to be like? What's golf going to be like without their number one marquee guy? And certainly it's not the same. It's different. But to me, it just seems like, boy, and even going to the Open Championship and Henrik Stenson and Phil Mickelson kind of out of nowhere, at least before the tournament began. Don't you just think that there's just so many phenomenal golfers, even as we look ahead to the PGA Championship? If you were a betting man, it would be so difficult to really figure out which of these now 20, 25 guys, maybe it used to be seemed like a handful, but now there's 25 guys at least that have a shot at every week.
It's crazy, and because they've all pushed. You know, Tiger started this push for this generation of players. You know, of how far you need to hit it, how low you have to score, and then so everybody. You know, this is the generation, the younger players now that grew up thinking you have to get 2,500 under par to win a tournament. You have to hit 325 yard drives. I mean, so that was their standard, and that's what. That's how they learn the game, and now you see them all. And you're right. I mean, it is. It's parity. You know, we're getting ready to start NFL season, and one of the great things for most people about football is the parity. The on any given Sunday, and man, you can use that term in golf anymore on any given Sunday because it's you know it's not the big three, it's the big four or five, and then you know you bring up Stenson, now a major champion, and. It's like Dustin Johnson, you know, who knows what a breakthrough win like that does for a guy who's got the game to do what he did. And now that he's got that relief, that, you know, just the dark cloud that was hanging over, not breaking through in a major, you get that off. And those guys certainly are as good as anybody in the game. So, yeah, it's, you know, you go into a week like this, and it's a PGA Championship, it's a final major, and everybody's looking at the you know, the main names. And then this is a week, this is a major where usually many times you see a surprise. You see somebody you didn't expect. This has kind of been the everyman's major that someone sneaks in, gets on the right course at the right time, and wins a major. So you've got that with all the other stuff. Dustin Johnson, Jason Day, Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, Phil and Stenson. I mean, all these guys. So it's kind of like let's throw them all together in one big pile and see what happens on Sunday.
Are you surprised we're being joined by Earl Forsey with PGA Tour Radio? Are you surprised that the big three have come up dry so far in the majors?
You know, I think from a sports broadcaster's perspective, watching this stuff for so many years, you shouldn't be surprised because fans got spoiled by just, and I brought this up with you before. You just it's true. And I know some players have talked about Spieth and not winning, you know, a major this year, and look at the great year. And we see it in all sports too. Guys have at some point in your career, a guy's going to have a career year. Now, when is that? And, you know, Tiger was able to, for a decade, to follow up a career year with another career year. And then another one. I mean, that's, you don't see it in sports. You don't, you know, it's so difficult to do. And it's so difficult once you're there to stay there. And in the, particularly in golf, you just don't see players year after year. We haven't over history, except for, you know, a couple guys win five times in a couple majors, six, seven times in a major or two every year. And it's just hard to do. And, you know, there's a lot of pressure. And specifically, you're talking about Spieth. He expects that too, though, you know. And I think all these guys do, whether it's Day, Spieth. They expect, okay, I won a couple last year. And if I haven't won one this year and I've only won a couple times or three, you know, it's – I mean, I hate to even say that because you're talking about, you know, Jason Day's case, a guy that's, you know, three wins, and you're kind of like, well, what shape is his game in? Well, it's pretty good, you know, and that's the thing. It's the expectations have been ramped up so high, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's the day and age. Everybody's paying attention a lot more than they used to. So does it surprise me that those, the quote, big three have not? No, it shouldn't. It really should not with the quality of the depths of fields anymore. And you know, maybe someone's going to get on one of these roles in for 4 or 5 years when you know, half a dozen times in a major or two every year. But that, it's just not that easy to do. It really isn't. And I think, you know, with the depth you brought into it, you know, they're just getting beat so many of these weeks. There's guys playing better. You know, sometimes you lose, and sometimes you get beat. And a lot of times this year, I think those guys are just getting beat by guys playing better that particular week.
And we're not even mentioning, but certainly will be mentioned in the week when we lead up into this, the guys that have a chance that we haven't talked about, and that's Dustin Johnson and Ricky Fowler and Bubba and Zach Johnson, Sergio. I mean, we could go on and on. Adam Scott is a phenomenal golfer. It is such a deep world of golf right now. But before I let you go, Earl, and I know you're busy, and we also know that you do a lot of baseball, and you're beloved. Washington Nationals are in first place. Everything's going well, but I want to know, does it matter to you? Do you care that the Cubs picked up Chapman? And make one little comment, if you would, on Chris Sale. What's with the guy cutting up the uniforms? Those two subjects, I want to know what you think.
I have from time to time during our golf coverage, you'll see something crazy. And I've said, and I'll bring up the fact, and I do, maybe to, you know, people get sick of hearing it, but it's true. I've been doing this for three decades, and you always think, you've seen it all, and you can't hear anything or see anything crazier, and then something comes along, and the Chris Sale deal is one of those. I mean, I've never heard of anything like that before. That is just, I don't know what to make of something like that.
Explain to people who didn't hear the story.
I mean, I don't know. Now, those old uniforms were ugly. They weren't going to wear the shorts, I guess. Remember the ones they had with the shorts?
Oh, yeah. Bill Veeck. Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah. So I'm not sure. Now, I might have cut those up if it were the shorts. But, no, you can't make that stuff up. And I don't know. That's, in a way, it's, you know, you kind of laugh at it, but that's a weird deal, too. I mean, just to have, like, a childish tirade? And destroy the uniform, that's weird. Anyway, that's strange. The other team in Chicago, the one on the north side. Yeah, that's... You know why that's a big deal? Because, look, in the Nats have, the Nationals are hanging on right now. They had a really shaky homestand. And they just went, they've lost five of their last seven. But, you know, Miami, the Mets were playing each other last weekend, kind of traded blows. And they've still got, you know, a little distance there. But their big thing is, well, there's a couple big things. But one of them is a guy that you can count on to close it out. They've been riding out Jonathan Papelbon, who got booed off the field on Sunday after giving up four in a tie game in the ninth inning. So, yes, that was the guy they were going after. Now, the asking price was extremely high. Four players, including the Cubs' top prospect, their shortstop, Graybar Torres. So that's an high asking price. The Nats were offering them two pitchers, a couple of minor league pitchers, and another player we don't really know who. And it wasn't enough, and that's the problem for them, is not only did they not get that guy, Raldis Chapman throws like 104 miles an hour every pitch. You know that, right?
Yeah,
He hit 105 last week, 105 with a pitch. Now, think of that because it's all about October. Now, he's a rental player, and that's the issue with the team like the Nats and a lot of other teams that – He could be gone, may very well be gone after it. So you're basically, whatever you're giving up, and in the Cubs' case, they're going to win their division. They're going to make the playoffs. Basically, this is a 12-game deal. They've got to win, you know, a couple playoff series and a World Series. That's what they're doing it for. And if you win, it's worth it. And if you don't win, it's not. But for the Nats and a team like that, it's tough because not only do you not get him, the team you're going to have to face now, they're going to have to beat Aroldis Chapman and the Cubs if they get that far. I mean, they've got, you know, they got to win a playoff series first before thinking about it. So, yeah, that's tough. And it's a seller's market right now in baseball. And they need help with the bullpen. The Nationals are a team that needs help at the top of the lineup. They can't manufacture runs, and they keep – going through center fielders every year, and they can't find a guy who's consistent. I don't know what the deal is with that. Yeah, that's a big deal. The Yankees still have another reliever, Andrew Miller, that they say they're not going to trade right now. We'll see. Wade Davis in Kansas City, I guess the Royals are about to tap out in the year, it sounds like. So he's probably the next relief arm that's available. And if you're serious about winning a World Series – In the National League, you got to do something to counter that move because the Cubs, who, you know, have been the best team, just got better. Just got the best, probably, closer in baseball. So you got to do something to answer. Otherwise, you're not going to win.
Well, we'll see what happens. Long season, a lot of games to be played, but it sure makes things interesting.
And of course, training camp starts this week.
And training camp starts.
Although we had a huge injury on defense in D.C. I was on the air breaking all that news yesterday.
We'll talk Kirk Cousins next week with you and other things. Absolutely. And also what happened at the PGA Championship. Earl, as always, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it. Oh, it's going to be exciting. Going to be great. All right, Earl Forsey, thanks so much. Appreciate it. With PGA Tour Radio. All right, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we've got Bob Bupka joining us. He's from TuneIn Radio on the Grill Room, and he is coming to us live from Springfield, New Jersey, site of the PGA Championship at Baltusrol. That's coming up when we return to Golf Talk America right after this. Welcome back to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews with you as this is the week of the PGA Championship. It also is Ryder Cup year, so that means an awful lot. Right now it's Dustin Johnson, Jordan Spieth, Phil Mickelson, Zach Johnson, JB Holmes, Brent Snedeker, Bubba, and Matt Kuchar are the top eight for the Ryder Cup team facing the Europeans coming up a little bit later in the fall. But that comes after the PGA Championship, which comes after or before the Rio Olympics. So a lot of golf, a lot of big-time international golf being played. But right now, this is the week of the PGA Championship at Baltusrol. And joining us is Bob Bupka. He is the host of The Grill Room on TuneIn Radio. And Big Bob, how are you doing in New Jersey? Kind of back in your stomping grounds, huh?
Yeah, it really is. A wonderful trip over to Scotland. Certainly an incredible championship. Henrik Stenson prevailing over Phil Mickelson in just, you know, dynamic fashion. I mean, Phil Mickelson went to bed Saturday night trailing by a shot, wakes up Sunday morning, goes out to the golf course, plays brilliantly, shoots a 6 under par, 65, 6 birdies, no bogeys, and instead of gaining on the leader, he falls 2 shots further back to lose by 3, but he was 11 shots clear of third place. So just an indication, Tim, of how well those top 2 guys really played.
It was a phenomenal Open Championship, followed last week by another Open Championship, the Canadian Open, that Johnny Vegas came from behind and beat Dustin Johnson. And now here we are at Baltusrol. First of all, you've been to Baltusrol before, Bob, or is this your first trip there? I never think any golf course would be your first time there, but what do you think of the golf course, Baltusrol?
Well, I think it's one of the great golf courses in the country. I have been here previously. I was here for a PGA Championship. I was here for a U.S. Open when Lee Jansen won. So I know this golf course. I know what a test it's going to be. The last 3 holes are pretty interesting with a very demanding par 3 and then back-to-back par 5s on 17 and 18. Just an incredible finish. 17 playing well over 600 yards and 18 now 554, but it's such a tough driving hole that you have to hit a magnificent drive, Tim, even to have a chance. Back in 1967, I believe, Jack Nicklaus, when he won a U.S. Open here, he hit a 1-iron from 237 yards on that 18th hole back in 67 with that golf ball, with the, you know, technology or lack of technology in the golf club, they hit him 1-iron, 237, was a mammoth shot, and he pulled it off.
It's a golf course that has a lot of history. Do you think it favors any one golfer in particular? I guess it's another way of asking you, give me a couple of names, guys, you think are A, playing well, and B, will play this golf course well.
Well, I'm kind of leaning towards picking Sergio Garcia. I think he was inspired by Henrik Stenson, 40 years old. Henrik was constantly asked every tournament he showed up, especially the majors, when are you going to win a major? When are you going to win a major? And I think maybe the same is ringing true for Sergio Garcia. Played well at Royal Tron, has played well in this championship before. Matter of fact, back in 1999, when he was a young whippersnapper, he tried to chase down Tiger Woods, ended up finishing second. So I think Sergio Garcia is long overdue. And if I had to pick a long shot here, I don't know. I'd probably go with somebody like Kevin Kisner. Maybe he can get the job done. You know, he's a great ball striker. If he gets a hot putter, who knows what can happen over Baller's Roll. I know this much. It's going to be very hot. Temperatures are going to be right around 100 degrees, believe it or not, for wow. much of the week. Thunderstorms could be a factor. So there's going to be some luck of the draw, Tim, which occurred at Royal Troon. Rory McIlroy got the bad end of the draw, and then weather really messed up his attempt to win. But he did finish fifth, so Rory McIlroy, probably somebody else you better keep a close eye on here. He comes in here hitting the golf ball pretty well.
And you're right about Sergio. After winning the Byron Nelson, he actually has got three straight fifth-place finishes, including the last two majors. He's been in the hunt the last two majors and fifth place, so he is playing very, very well. It could be, finally, the time for Sergio to come through. We're talking with Bob Bupka, host of The Grill Room on TuneIn Radio. What about the big three being shut out so far in the majors? Surprised by that, Bob, that you haven't seen either Day or Spieth or McIlroy right now having held any of the trophies for the majors up until the PGA Championship?
Well, honestly, I can't say I'm surprised, only because, as you well know, Mr. Matthews, the depth of the field out here nowadays is just simply incredible. I think when Jack Nicklaus played at any given major, there might have been 30 players that would have a legitimate chance at winning. I think that number now may be as high as 75, 80, 90 players in this field, which is a very international field. Matter of fact, we have 72 international players from 24 different countries. So it goes to show you that, you know, this United States PGA Championship, but in reality, it's a World PGA Championship with players from all over the globe coming here to Baller's Roll to participate.
Yeah, the depth of the field is incredible, and there's so many great players that that come and play in the PGA Championship. They claim to be the strongest field of all the majors, and that may indeed be the case. It does seem, though, that, Bob, it's also the one major where kind of anything can happen, and you see guys kind of come out of nowhere often and win a PGA Championship that aren't often heard of before or after. First of all, why do you think that might be? And do you think there's a chance that you're going to get one of those guys that we haven't really heard much about or anything about that and that goes all the way back, certainly before John Daly, but one that a lot of us have in memory is that John Daly comes as a ninth alternate. Nobody had any clue who this guy was. And to do what he did at the PGA Championship in Indiana, do you think there's a chance we could see something like that this year?
Well, obviously, there's always a chance, Tim. And, you know, the name Jason Duffner pops up. He got the job done. Keegan Bradley, another player that got the job done that nobody ever talked about prior to the championship they won. Rich Beam, you know, out-of-nowhere winner.
Sure.
Sean McKeel, another out-of-nowhere winner. It does have a history of, you know, the lesser names prevailing. I don't know what it is. You know, I often think that, you know, it's the fourth major of the year, the real big guns that are so excited in April about the first major of the year, and then they don't play well there. They don't play well in the U.S. Open. They continue that trend in Open Championships. So when they come to the PGA, they're kind of disappointed. They're let down. They didn't have the big year that they had hoped to have, and probably even more important, the big year that people predicted they would have. So the big names are a little flat at the PGA, where the lesser names, they're really hungry because it is a major and it's their last chance that year. Now, this is just a formula that I have in my head. I wouldn't put any money on it because I've had many a formula that didn't work out well.
That left it at the racetrack, and you had a Tear up your ticket. I got you. I know exactly what you're saying. It also is a very condensed season. We've got major on top of major, it seems like, and now we've got the Rio Olympics being thrown in there, and we've got Ryder Cup coming up in just a little bit. Have you seen that? You're covering the tour weekly, and you're out there, and you're around a lot of these guys. Is it becoming the drag or the pressure-filled, no time off kind of between big majors and big events that a lot of people feared it might? Do you see any difference this year in the attitudes or the play of some of the players, or is it just the way it is and guys have to play through it despite the fact that there's very little time in between playing in some of these big events?
Well, you know, Tim, they're trying to ignore the fact that this golf season has really been condensed. And now you're hearing more and more little grumblings as you go down the range and you sit in the locker room from players, you know, asking the question, couldn't the schedule have been made a little bit different, a little more accommodating, a little stretching out? I mean, golly, I mean, 2 weeks ago, I mean, I'm talking now even as a broadcaster, how difficult it is. Coming down, coming off of an Open Championship at Royal Troon in Scotland, and just a few days later, we're here in New Jersey for the PGA Championship, and then it is the Olympics in Rio, and then it is the Tour Championship, and then it is the Ryder Cup. I mean, 2016 is going to be remembered as one big blur when all is said and done.
Yeah, it is indeed complicated. And do you think that the players are conscious of, certainly in the Ryder Cup, let's say that, for the Americans and the Europeans, is Ryder Cup still on their minds? Because there's a lot of guys that haven't played a lot of Ryder Cup that right now could play, but there's so many points still available out there, despite the fact they want to win at Baltusrol. Is Ryder Cup, for a lot of the top, let's say even 20 players in both the European and the Americans, is it still in the back of their minds? Because Davis Love has been talking about it. Everybody's still talking Ryder Cup. Is that affecting some of these guys' play and the pressure of wanting to try to make a Ryder Cup team?
Well, you raise an interesting point. I know for a fact, I've never met anybody on the PGA Tour that didn't have a huge desire to play Ryder Cup. I mean, you know, they love the team aspect. It used to be a lot more fun for the U.S. players when they were winning all the time. Now they, you know, it's a struggle. And there's going to be a lot of pressure on Davis Love. Many thought that he should have won at Medina. With that team, Europe came back on the final day to take the Ryder Cup away, and now he has agreed to do it again. It's one thing to lose once as a Ryder Cup captain. You lose two times as a Ryder Cup captain, it leaves a bad taste in your mouth, and you know, for your friends and family who really would love to see Davis do well. I mean, as solid a guy as there is in the world of professional golf, I mean, just nobody any better. You and I are lucky covering golf on the radio. We have an ambassador, the equal of David Slove, out in the forefront for us when it comes Ryder Cup time. So, hey, and Darren Clark, almost identical. I mean, I could switch the name David Slove and put Darren Clark there. He's well-liked, great for the game, great ambassador. You know, doesn't like to lose. Davis doesn't like to lose. I mean, we're going to have a lot of excitement at this year's Ryder Cup. There's no doubt about that. And as you accurately pointed out, Jim, that we got so much golf to decide before we even get there. So it is 2016 really going to be a big blur when we stop and look back later on this fall. We'll say, holy mackerel, that went by like a freight train.
It is going to be interesting. It all gets started on Thursday at Baltusrol, first round of the PGA Championship in Springfield, New Jersey. And Bob Boepka is going to be there. We'll be joined by you later on this week, and you can give us a little bit more insight into the first, second rounds of what's going to happen there at Baltusrol. In the meantime, Bob, thanks so much. I know you are exhausted, or you have to be. I'm exhausted just listening to your itinerary for the last 3 or 4 weeks. Try to get some rest, and we'll be talking to you later this week, okay?
All right, Tim, thanks again for having me on, and I really appreciate it, and it's a big week in golf.
It sure is. Bob Bupka, host of The Grill Room on TuneIn Radio. Thanks so much. And we will have Bob again back from Springfield, New Jersey at Baltusrol later on this week. Hey, Frank Bassett in our Nashville studios. Really good points that we were talking both with Earl Forsey and Bob Bupka. This season is like a whirlwind. And I just wonder if down the road there's going to be any alterations to that. We certainly have seen a change in the landscape of who's going to be playing in the Olympics, and I guess it's made it a little bit easier for a lot of the top guys that have decided to drop out and not play. If this happens, which I assume it will, the next Olympics that come around, they're going to have to, do you think they can change the schedule some way? It just really does seem like it's so jam-packed in there. I don't know what else you could do, but boy, it just seems like these guys who normally have their own schedule and can kind of come and go as they want are being forced almost to play a lot more golf than you would expect them at that kind of a level, not just playing in regular tour events, but major and big events. They're kind of getting crammed in there, aren't they?
9 days. 9 days between majors. 9 days. That's too jammed. It's just way too jammed. And if you have someone with a hot hand like Dustin Johnson has right now, 30 days, you can cool off a little bit, or you can over-prepare. 9 days, that's incredible to me. I believe that they have to do something about the schedule in 4 years. And they've got 4 years to work it out. That should be plenty of time.
And the Rio Olympics are right around the corner for the guys that are competing. And that's not to say because some of the top guys aren't. There are a lot of top players that will be playing in the Olympics, and that includes even from our country, Bubba and Ricky are playing, and Matt Kuchar. I mean, there's some big guys that are playing in this in the Olympics that they head to Rio as soon as they finish it at Baltusrol. They head to Rio. And then, as we said, then you start the Deutsche Bank and the BMW. I mean, you got the FedEx Championship coming up in the playoffs. And then as soon as you finish that, boom, it's the Ryder Cup. I mean, it's just their head has to be swimming. But, you know, I guess the cream will rise to the top. We'll see exactly how this all shakes out. But, boy, that's just a lot of golf.
Well, it is, and the FedEx Cup playoffs. I mean, it's all on top of each other right now. I mean, we've got a lot of golf. They're going to be. I think there'll be some surprises toward the end of this season, if you will, because they're going to be some worn out players. I mean, just flat worn out from travel and just the intensity of play. So there you go.
And you wonder about injuries too, which hasn't happened yet, but will something happen to some of these top players if they are playing a lot more than they're used to playing? It does beg the question, okay, you got to be in good condition. And people talk about Dustin and Jordan and Jason Day being really good athletes, not just golfers. But, you know, that's a lot more intense golf than they normally would be used to. So we'll see. We'll see if it makes it great for a fan standpoint, because we just sit in front of the TV for about 12 straight weeks and watch international great competition in golf. So it should be pretty interesting. Again,
well, no, there's a downside. There is a downside to this, and it's my data streaming plan. I'm eating up lots of data, brother.
Trying to keep up with all the events that are going on. You're right.
Yeah.
Well, the PGA Championship starts. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, and, you know, the PGA Championship, as you're about to say, begins this week. Thank goodness the Democratic Convention will be over as the PGA Championship starts. So, you know, I won't be torn. I can tell you this. I just won't be torn as to which one to watch. So there you go.
I don't know where the intensity will be more intense at one or the other. But, yeah, one's in Philadelphia, one's in New Jersey. But a lot of intensity.
Feel the burn.
Places. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, Lord.
All right, well, that should do it. We are out of time. PGA Championship again starts on Thursday at Baltusrol in Springfield, New Jersey, and Bob Bupka will join us then. We'll have some other people. Steve Johnson will also be joining us. And thanks to Bob, Earl Forsey, for being with us today on the show. I'm Tim Matthews for Frank Bassett. We appreciate your time. Thanks so much for being with us, and please join us right here on Golf Talk America the next time.